Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, hello, hello. It is the End Zone, Falcon Zone, Super Pro Football Hour. I'm your host, Jeremy York, joined once again by the coach, Mr. Haywood Hill, and also Reggie Walker. How we doing, guys?
Doing great, Jeremy. Doing great.
Doing great, Jeremy.
You know, we'll get into it a little bit later on, but right before we came on, Reggie, you were saying that you're going to get a chance to see the Red Rifle up close and personal on Sunday, correct?
Yes, sir. I'm going to get a chance to see him go down. But
you
yeah,
know
I'm going to get a chance to see him and Mr. A.J. Green up close and personal.
Hey, that's always a good thing, for one, just to get to see any NFL game, especially get to travel to one. I always have a good time being out of town doing that. And you know what? Before we even get to Falcons on, I'll go ahead and call it now. I know I've been on this guy the whole time. Especially during the preseason. In fact, most of us, I believe, didn't even have him on the 53-man roster that he proved us wrong on. I'm going to say Croy Bierman's going to sack the Red Rifle at least once.
I'll save that for Falcons on. I'll save my rebuttal for Falcons on. How's that? But no, seriously, just on the stadium thing, that's a great thing. There are a lot of beautiful stadiums out there, and it's actually one of my personal goals to attend a game at every stadium that's out there. So this is one, Paul Brown is one that I have never been to before. So this will be my first time here.
Well, it's good to know that we have similar goals because that's one of mine as well. I've been looking at some out-of-town trips. Not sure I'll make Cincinnati, but definitely going to try to make it a couple places this year. But as I said, this is the End Zone Falcon Zone Super Pro Football Show. Our marketing department did such a good job at seeing how many words we could put in the title, but it works. So many injuries to talk about. We'll recap our picks from last week, or better yet, we'll just tell everybody how good Reggie is at picking games. We're going to debut a new segment. We'll get to that a little bit later on, right before Falcon Zone. For anybody that's following along at home, I appreciate you tuning in. You can... if you caught us on any social media outlet, just click the link and you should be able to listen to us and stream us wherever you're at. You can call in, be a part of the show at 347-826-7448. You can catch us on any of the Twitter or Facebook outlets as well. But if you are following along at home, I'll go ahead and give the hint for the In the Zone trivia. I'll give you the hint now. We'll go into it. We'll go into it right on the front side of Falcon Zone. But the hint that I gave the guys was the following numbers. There's two sets of numbers. There's 9,508, 10,070, that's one set of numbers, and then 62 and 56. Now, like I said, those are just the trivia hints. I'll actually let you guys guess at the front part of Falcon Zone as to what those numbers could represent. And then I'll give you guys some clues in case you didn't get it. But, you know, let's start by recapping our picks from last week. And like I said, it'd probably save us a lot of time, but we'll still go over them anyway. Of course, in the Green Bay-Seattle game, me and the coach decided we were going to go with the Packers, who apparently didn't realize that when the door opens on the bus, you're supposed to get off of it. Reggie, you were right in having Seattle there. I was the lone Saints supporter, which came to bite me pretty quickly. We'll talk about that game a little later down the road. Both you guys had Atlanta. Coach had Indy, and Denver ended up winning that game. Me and Reggie got that one. And then we were all homers for Arizona, who luckily decided to score two touchdowns late and win 18-17. So in case you need pick advice, I believe you need to hit up
Ridge.
Reggie. Yeah.
Ask the Ridge.
Yeah, definitely so. And We'll get to our picks for this week a little bit later on. But first, let's start into some of these injuries. Now, there's a bunch of them that had hit early on. Reggie, you just reminded me of the one I was about to add as well. Let's talk about John Abraham. On Monday, John Abraham of the Arizona Cardinals, who spent most of the summer in a DUI-related rehab, I believe, and some sort of rehab substance-related. I imagine it was DUI, but he rejoined the Cardinals, suffered a concussion on Monday, I believe left the team on Tuesday. Have you guys heard anything else about it?
The only last report that I heard is that he would has been suffering from severe memory loss for at least the past year.
I've heard the same thing, and one of the things that's scary about this now is with all of the concussion information that we have, now how does that factor into Mr. Abraham's career? Where did it start? Where has it picked up? And where does it go from here?
Right, and Coach, some of the other outlets, media outlets that I pay attention to, because first of all, I want to say get well, Mr. Abraham. Great, great player, Hall of Famer in my eyes,
a heck of
a player, a heck of a guy, and wish you all the best. But some of the other outlets I've read, he has actually had some extensive history with concussions over the years. It just wasn't highly broadcasted.
Yeah, I'm not gonna try to point fingers and say anything in particular, anything derogatory. The Falcons may be a quiet team as far as media is concerned, but as far as injury reports, they are usually at the forefront of letting you know what's going on with a guy or something like that. So they definitely haven't hid anything. But, yeah, I had heard that Abraham had had a handful of injuries related to memory loss and such. We just, for the most part, I just want him to be well and to be happy. And if being happy means that he's done playing the game he loves, then, you know, we wish the best to him. And at any rate, we'd love to have him on to talk about his career, especially as a Falcon.
Oh, man, I think I read a statistic, 133 sacks in 191 career games.
Yeah, I believe he is the current active leader right now. Of all the people that are still currently playing, I believe he has the most.
Yep. He's definitely top five, I'm sure.
Well, there's no question that his career speaks volumes and his body of work is there that will warrant a ballot for the Hall of Fame. I think one of the things that concerns me now as a coach, as I look at this injury, is that, you know, he kind of went MIA. And I'm curious to know if he was getting the testing done independently as he spoke with his team that includes his own private personal physician, his attorney, and also his agent. So now the question is, you know, where was he in this time that no one knew where he was? Or, and better yet, did that team know where he was at that time? So there's still a big question mark right now of concern just with that time that he's been absent.
Yeah, definitely so. And as I look at some of the other injuries we're going to get into in a minute, they all seem to have something in common. Pretty much everybody we're going to talk about on the injury front that I'm looking at here is all either a defensive lineman or an outside linebacker. It seems like the pass rusher position took a huge hit. You know, Chris Long in St. Louis is going to be out for 6 to 8 weeks. He just had ankle surgery. He fractured or broke his ankle, ended up deciding to go ahead and have the surgery now. The question that I brought up, and I brought it up to you, Coach, earlier, but at this point, can the Rams turn around and try to sign Michael Sam?
Well, it's going to be a tall order, honestly, Jeremy. At this point, the fact that they did not retain him on the practice roster and he was picked up by Dallas after he cleared waivers, and they have signed him to the practice roster. Now, you must understand, being signed to the practice roster of any NFL team allows you to be employed by the NFL. So anyone can sign you to their activated roster. Mr. Jones saw something in him. We talked about it last week in Coach Fisher, basically politically being politically correct, signing off on him by saying he was a fan. Now he's with the Cowboys. We already know that it's no secret that Cowboys have a lot of issues on defense. The question now is, does Mr. Jones pull the string now and sign him so that no one else can sign him? And if St. Louis wants to come back to the table, what would they be willing to give for him just due to the fact that there won't be a learning curve there? He's gone through training camp. He knows the system. He's put up some numbers in preseason games from training camp. So now what is his value to go back to the Rams is the question. That's going to be the part of it that's going to make it very difficult for them to make that type of move.
Well, to the Cowboys' point, weren't they having some salary cap issues that may prevent them from signing Mr. Sams, or who would they release? Who would you release? Would it be worth releasing an active player just to kind of play that chess game, if you will?
Well, I mean, again, they have a couple of players that are out there that are, that can be a situation for them. Right now, they have to depend on their offense, so it would have to be someone on the defensive side of the ball, even probably releasing, one or two guys on the defensive side of the ball, because, again, he does add value to the team. The problem is that he doesn't know their system. So part of the reason of putting him on the practice roster is giving him the opportunity to do so since he was not there during training camp. Now the question is, who might make the move and what type of price would they be willing to pay for it, because they still have to do something with that organization who has him on the practice roster. So what they're doing is basically forcing the hands of the other teams respectfully by saying, if you want Mr. Sams, you're going to have to sign him to your activated roster. Who wants to do that besides St. Louis right now? Because everyone else is in the same bucket as Dallas right now and him learning their system.
Well, and to help him out, think about it this way. For one, who on the Dallas defense actually knows the plays and the playbook and system anyway, because they look horrible? And two, that may actually be an advantage that Michael Sam doesn't know the scheme. He may actually be able to step up and make a play for him.
And that is one way to look at it, Jeremy. The fact that they have so many gaping holes on their defense allows room for someone like a Sam's to come in and bring a breath of fresh air, if you will. The other side of this, too, is that you got to understand that Mr. Jones is a businessman. He looked at the marketability of this player. He looked at how he sold jerseys. He needs a pass rusher. So all the things, all of the ingredients are there to produce success for Mr. Sams. The question is, when will he pull the trigger? And trust me, he's watching the Lions, and they're being carefully monitored on who is finding interest in him, because they still have to deal with Dallas to sign him from their practice roster. So that's where everything, is in the favor of the Cowboys right now and having him as a commodity.
Yeah, I think so. And to move from one good pass rusher to what could be a great pass rusher, Jadeveon Clowney tore his meniscus. He could miss 4 to 6 weeks for the Houston Texans. Doesn't this kind of revert back to the scouting report from South Carolina on this guy?
Yeah, I was thinking that, and then I also read that this is the third significant injury that he has had since he has been at the pro level. He's had a concussion, he had the hernia surgery, and now this torn meniscus. So, yeah, it definitely does go back to that scouting report. And even if I might add, and this is something that Coach Hill could speak on, I thought exactly about his words and about draft day and some of the other comments that he's made about the due diligence that a lot of these teams do on these players before they draft them, before they sign them, et cetera, et cetera. And even in the John Abraham case, I know that I was incited as a Falcon fan, and you guys were with me to witness the incitement about not getting Mr. Clowney. But also you've heard my comments about, our release of Mr. Abraham. And it made me think, just how much these teams must have really known some of these things, and that's maybe what was cautious about why they didn't go after some of these guys.
Well, kind of the quick answer to that is, now that you've seen the movie Draft Day, you know what me and Coach are talking about when we say it's that something. And maybe the something on Jadeveon Clowney was he could be injury prone.
Right, and you go back to the force plate technology that the Falcons employed in the whole nine. So I got to thinking about all of those things as I read that.
Well,
it's unfortunate
for
Clowney. I think he'll be back, though.
Yeah, absolutely, Reg. And I like to add to that, we have a saying in professional sports, when in doubt, send a scout. And so that's why they're there. That's why that department is there. Their job is to go out and find each thing that they can find about you, positive and or negative. So that's part of the thing. If you go back and let's look at Clowney at South Carolina, one of the reasons why he left early is because of the injuries. He actually played hurt at South Carolina his junior year. So it was only smart for him to make the move and jump while his value was still high. I think had he been at South Carolina right now, this injury probably would have been one that could have, you know, very well dropped his stock as a senior. So you have to take those things into consideration. Plus, you added the hernia surgery as well as already a first, you know, a first-degree concussion for him. So now when you take those things into consideration, Atlanta sees these things. That is probably why it was alleged and rumored that they had the first pick going to this year's draft, and 15 minutes prior to going air, they pulled it back. So now you see why. Going back to Mr. Abraham, again, we've always loved him in Atlanta. He's done a great job. I mean, again, his body of work speaks for itself. But again, this is probably why the contract was not extended. This is why he always was in a contract battle with Atlanta, because of those injuries that were not, you know, heavily publicized. So these are the things that the scouting report did. I want you guys to understand something about scouting reports. They are vaulted information. That is how much they protect those. Even if it's a player they do not draft, okay, the scouting reports go into a vault and they are there forever. They have millions of scouting reports on every player that was ever at a combine, had a work, had a pro day at their school, or they were potentially looking at drafting.
Yeah, and at least with this, with the Clowney issue now, with the injury, it's kind of an okay time, not for anybody to get hurt, but as far as where Houston's at right now, they can kind of afford for him to miss a little bit of time. They're not really on a big push yet. On the flip side of that, you have the Chiefs, who just lost linebacker Derek Johnson and defensive tackle Mike DeVito to torn Achilles injury. I believe Johnson just had surgery and DeVito will by the end of the week. The Chiefs are trying to stay relevant in that division with Denver, and I already had them taking a step back. I think they just took a giant leap back.
Right, yeah. Those were the two injuries that, as I was reading your notes, those were the two that stuck out the most in my mind out of everything. I mean, even with Mr. Clowney going down, they still have the incomparable J.J. Watt to toe the line, but I think this decimates the Chiefs as far as their defensive front is concerned.
No, I agree. I think them losing, you know, they lose two key players in their defense, and I don't know if they have the depth or the strength right now or even the funds to go out and try to replace those guys immediately.
Yeah, and to a Chiefs defense that used to be like the Arizona defense, and Arizona's had a lot of injuries here lately too, but I think they'll be okay. The Chiefs never really have gotten their offense going. I mean, even last week it was down a good bit. I mean, we could see the Chiefs back on the downfall, and Andy Reid's going to have to possibly make a move just to kind of stay afloat right now.
Yeah, they're definitely starting to get a little bit of taste of what the Atlanta Falcons were dealing with last year.
But moving on to a non-injury related, but just kind of an odd story all the way around. Running back LaMichael James, I believe he played at Oregon. He was part of the Chip Kelly offense in college. He asked the 49ers organization for a release, his outright release, and actually got it, according to his agent. I guess let me pose this to you first, Coach. Does this happen often that players will ask for their outright release like this, or is this just him trying to get out of town?
I think he's starting to see the writing on the wall as far as his time, tenure, and productivity with the 49ers. I don't think it's a good move right now. I think he's gambling on some things. I think there are some places that maybe might have found some interest in him, but I think he fails to realize he still has to go in behind their number one back. So, you know, I don't see any place outside of maybe St. Louis where he can immediately come in and be an impact-type player, but again, his body of work has not been there enough for someone to just want to make that move. So he might be drawing some interest, and he might be also looking at teams that are, you know, that are going to be needing a running back or not quite sure what they have in their backup right now so that he can make a push for it. But I think maybe he should have stayed where he was and probably played this year out and then talk about that in the offseason, because right now it's going to be very hard to just move him into a system, you know, especially with all of the blocking schemes and the sophistication of offenses And if he's not a player that has been in an offense or something similar to, it might be very hard for him to catch on.
Right. Yeah, I agree with you, Coach. I often wonder with these types of moves and decisions, and I get it. I mean, he's behind Gore and Carlos Hyde, and even when Hunter comes back, I mean, he's always going to be behind that guy as well. So his chances of playing were kind of going out of the window as it was with 49ers. However, I wonder, I know that as a coach or as a GM of a team, if I were one, I would have some question about his dedication and his loyalty. And that would kind of make me look a little sideways as it relates to signing him. So I don't really know what he was doing with that.
Well, yeah, and let's not forget the 49ers still have the contract rights to Marcus Lattimore, I believe, which I don't know if he'll play this year as well. He may sit out another complete year with his knees. But if that guy's even half as explosive as he used to be, then suddenly LaMichael James is not 4 on the depth chart. He's 5.
Right, if he even makes the team at all. You're right. I forgot all about him, Jeremy. Good point.
The other thing I like to add to that, too, guys, is that one of the things I would have advised him as an agent is a check is better than no check. So you voluntarily gave up, you know, finances for yourself in the hopes that, you know, maybe you can strike gold somewhere else. But if that doesn't happen, you know, at this point, he's technically out of a job.
Yeah, pretty much. You know, and maybe he was kind of doing the roundabout thing that Abraham was doing, and maybe it's injury related. Maybe it's maybe he's worried about his health. Maybe he took a concussion shot or a hard hit to the head, and he's trying to check himself out. I mean, just time will tell on this. I feel like if he don't hit on, you know, if he don't get on somewhere in the next couple weeks, that, you know, we may see him in a arena league or maybe in Canada or something, because he may have closed the window on himself.
Yeah, that's a possibility. That's a strong possibility. I have to also co-sign with our other co-host, Reggie, on this, is that, you know, his loyalty is going to be questioning. You know, he didn't leave college with the highest regards. I mean, there were some things that were there that happened, you know, on national TV. So there are some things there that, you know, as his agent, I think I would have just told him we need to sit still until we are for sure we have another contract on the table. The agent's job is to continue to find his client work. And at this point, it can go from just what you just said, from the NFL to the Arena Football League. And that's how far his stock can drop just that fast. Again, the agent would have done his job if he presents him with a contract. It's not about how much money is in the contract. It's about me producing an opportunity for you to play and earn money in your profession. So I don't think I would have made that move. I think I just would have stayed there. Although as a player and that warrior mentality, you want to play, sometimes you have to sit still and let your stock go up and down. That's just what happens, you know, in this crazy world of sports. But at least you're with a team that's winning, that, you know, again, is going to postseason team. You can get some bonus money here, and at that point, at the end of the season, look at what teams need your services and go after it that way versus just probably being upset and just quitting.
Right, and the other main issue we were wanting to tackle, or just kind of briefly go over because we're still waiting on the vote, is the NFL Players Association and the league are meeting as of right now, and it could be passed as soon as right now. Basically, the league is wanting to test players for HGH and really just more define other substances on there, such as amphetamines and other things that aren't outlined, kind of the way they had to go in and rewrite the domestic violence thing. And the Players Association said, well, we have no, you know, the players are okay with you testing for these other things and actually putting in writing what the penalty actually is, but what do we get back? And basically what's going to happen is the league can now test for HGH, and the players are going to, if they get caught with marijuana in their system, it's not going to be as severe as it has been before. And as soon as this passes, anybody that's currently serving a marijuana suspension is going to have it reduced, if not eradicated. So, I mean, Josh Gordon could actually start playing as soon as a couple weeks from now.
Right, and that's what I was thinking is if they're going to, if the NFLPA is going to allow them in my opinion, if they're going to allow them to go after some of these other undocumented drugs or what have you, or substances, I should say, they're going to have to give on the one that's becoming legalized, even in our United States here, and that's on the marijuana charges. I know I personally dropped an aforementioned player and picked up Josh Gordon in my fantasy league in anticipation of this coming out.
What I like to add to that is very well played by the NFLPA, very well played. I mean, this time they put something back on the table versus just taking what was put on the table. And I think this is a good move for them. It's a good move for the Players Association to say, hey, you know, as you're adding things that we don't have a problem with, there are things that we'd like to now make sense as far as the drug testing is concerned. So now I think that this is a good move for both sides. Both parties got something out of the deal, and so I think they'll both be happy moving forward with that.
Yeah, and hopefully we hear more about this as it happens. I've been paying close attention to Chris Mortensen, Adam Schefter, Dan Patrick, and Mike Florio, because between one of the four of them, as soon as this drops, we're going to know about it. But we'll quickly get into our picks for this week, and hopefully, Coach, me and you can start to catch Reggie here and not let him get too far ahead. We can't let him run away too much. He kind of defeats the purpose of picking, I think. But we're going to start with tonight's Steelers at the Ravens. Reggie, who you got in this one?
You know what? In lieu of all of the recent debauchery going on with that organization, I think you're going to see an emotionally charged team. So I'm going to go with the Baltimore Ravens on this one.
All right, Coach, who you got?
I think I like Baltimore in this as well. I think they have something to prove. They need to reassure their fans that they're together and they're ready to play. And this game is in Baltimore, so I have to go with Baltimore on this one as well.
I think not only is it a short week for Baltimore, all this week I don't know how they've been able to concentrate. I do see the whole Ray Rice thing being a huge distraction up there. The media is just asking those questions. They're not even asking team-related questions. You know, Pittsburgh almost lost it last week, was able to rally. I think Big Ben's going to get win number two for the year. I got Pittsburgh in this one. I think it's just too big of a distraction for the Ravens. And then game two, we have the surprisingly struggling New England Patriots against the surprisingly pretty productive Minnesota Vikings.
I am going to actually take the New England Patriots in this game. I think that the Minnesota Vikings, albeit they played extremely well this last game, I think that was an anomaly. I think Tom Brady carves them up.
I like to have Minnesota in this game. I think that they are a team on the rise. I don't think that New England still has enough up front right now athletically that can keep people off of Brady. I think also he still is developing a relationship with his receivers, although I'm sure that got better in practice. I just feel that with what Minnesota has to offer on defense and most definitely what they have in offense, they will be the team that will come out of this one.
So you have Minnesota?
Minnesota.
Yeah, I'm going to agree with you here. And it's maybe I'm just riding the short creative wave here or something like that, but Matt Castle sounded strong in the preseason interviews I heard of him. He actually, I didn't realize he had such a personality. Usually you don't get to hear him. They do have Adrian Peterson, arguably still a top three back. Cordarrelle Patterson has emerged as, you know, the possible next breakout wide receiver. And I don't think New England has figured it out. I still think as many question marks they had last year, I feel like they're still kind of in an odd spot right now. So I think Minnesota's going to pull this out, and we're going to see Brady throw a temper tantrum. Always entertaining to watch those. But Next up, we have the Atlanta Falcons going up to Cincinnati to take on the Red Rifle and his Bengals. Coach, who you have in this one?
I have Atlanta this one all the way. I think Atlanta coming out off the New Orleans game, playing five quarters of football, coming out relatively healthy, having Matt Ryan do exactly what I said he needed to do before the season started, which was to sustain third downs and keep the chains moving by running a little bit. Atlanta will just carve up Cincinnati.
All right,
Randy. Right, and Jeremy, you don't even have to ask my pick. You already know Atlanta Falcons all the way.
Yeah, I think this will be our homer pick for the week. I don't see Cincinnati as strong enough, and Atlanta did exactly what I said they should do and proved me wrong for picking against them. They did look real good. I don't know if they can sustain the high level they had, but that was a rivalry game, and it always feels good to beat Drew Brees. I do think they're gonna beat Cincinnati going away pretty much. It's not going to be a blowout, but, you know, there's a chance maybe T.J. Yates gets some playing time in the end of this one.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And my concern with Cincinnati is that, and I was telling residents this before we came on the air, I said, you know, the problem with Cincinnati is that I love Marv Lewis as a coach, but the problem is they never have two of the same thing. They're always lacking something. And Residual kind of took a snippet from the movie Friday by saying peanut butter, no jelly, you know, mustard, no ketchup. So they always have one piece of something, but they always lack something else. And I think that's what has always been their problem.
Yeah, that's really a good way to put it, is I'd say all the way back into the, you know, Carson Palmer had a pretty good team a couple years ago for a couple years, but I'd have to go all the way back to the days of Boomer Esiason before they actually had a good combo at various positions.
Right, and I actually looked at it a little bit more analytically than usual, believe it or not, just kind of looking at their injuries. You got Geno Atkins, who was basically carted off after the last game and was seen around the facility on crutches and hadn't practiced all week. You've got Burfict, who's coming off a concussion injury as well, which are the stalwarts on their defense. And again, you know, if you can't get pressure, as Matt Ryan has already shown, you can't get pressure on him with those weapons, he will carve you up. So it's going to either be a major shootout, or, you know, all we need is the Atlanta defense to get one or two stops, and this thing could get away ugly real quick.
Yeah, I still stand by my statement that I think Bearman sacks the Red Rifle at least once. But, you know, as you said, Reg, you can get into that later.
Right.
Right. Well, what I wanted to add, too, guys, is that you must understand that Atlanta has to also, on their quest to the Super, you know, to the road to the Super Bowl, teams like this, they have to beat convincingly. They can't just go out and get into a shootout and beat them by, you know, 3 points or beat them by a touchdown. When they take on teams like this, they have to go out and dominate these teams coming, you know, as a matter of fact, at kickoff. They have to dominate the game and never allow Cincinnati to think they had a chance to even be on the field with them. And these are the type of games also that can hurt you, because coming off such a high, what happens normally with a team, they go into a game like this and they'll find themselves playing down, with the lack of better terms, to the competition, and that's when it becomes a football game. So Atlanta has to most definitely stay focused, go in, come out strong, and, you know, just put their foot on the gas and never take it off until the clock says triple zeros.
And I'll reserve my comments for that on the next half of the hour, but that's a good point, Coach.
And then from one game that we feel is absolutely easy to pick to, I mean, kind of week two, besides, it was kind of hard to find good matchups and good games just for our picks, let alone across the league. Week two kind of looked like the college equivalent of week one or week two. There's a lot of really one-sided games, but to me, the Sunday night football game is the ultimate coin flip. You have Chicago Bears, rather, going to help open Levi's Stadium in Santa Clara, California, but that's the new home of the San Francisco 49ers. Coach, who you have in this one?
You know, I still have to at least lean on San Francisco, because they have a lot to prove in opening up their stadium with this game. They went into Dallas. I can't really measure them against Dallas because, again, you know, Dallas, they're a football team with a lot of problems right now. So this will be their first true test. The question is how well they come out of mistake-free. They had a lot of mistakes against Dallas, but because they were much more athletic in positions and also just had a much more conducive team, they pull it off in Dallas without a problem. But Chicago seems to be a little bit different. But just because they're at home, everything that goes around, the legacy of opening up the new stadium, first team to play in it, got to go to San Francisco.
All right, Reggie?
I'm definitely going with San Francisco on this. I did not like what I saw out of the Chicago Bears against the Buffalo Bills. To get beat at home by a team that I thought was far less talented than what I thought Chicago had to offer, that defense was just clueless. And I just think San Francisco runs away with this.
Yeah, especially seeing as how Cutler looked like typical Cutler, which is I call him the B-minus version of Tony Romo, where he has all these amazing stats, but he just seems to throw the wrong passes a lot of times. And it doesn't help that both Alshon Jeffrey, I believe Matt Forte as well, but also Brandon Marshall are dinged up with leg injuries and kind of game-time decisions. As many weapons as he could have, no matter how many Cutler has, I think Kaepernick's going to do quite well. I got San Francisco as well. But that's going to do it for our picks. To recap, we all have San Francisco over Chicago on Sunday Night Football. We all have Atlanta to silence the Red Rifle in Cincinnati. Reggie has New England, and me and the coach have Minnesota in that game. And also we have Baltimore over Pittsburgh. Or you guys have Baltimore. I have Pittsburgh in that game. In just about a half hour from now, I believe. Nope, about an hour from now. It's hard to read a clock today for some reason. Before we get into In the Zone trivia, I've been saying for most of the day that we're going to debut a new segment. And, Coach, if you're ready, I think we'll get right into that.
I am ready.
So now let's find out what's the deal with Coach Hill. All right, so Coach Hill, what is the deal with the Ray Rice situation?
All right, let's talk about Ray Rice for a second. As we very well know, he had a huge contract that he signed. Right now, one of the biggest things that comes out of this issue is that he has a domestic violence situation that he is facing, okay? He must now do a couple of things. As we look at this thing unfold, the Ray Rice saga, if you will, we must look at three things. First, Roger Goodell, and how the NFL is looking at this. Mr. Goodell right now is faced with a dilemma. That dilemma being that there has been some allegations that he knew about this tape. Now, let's investigate this situation as it unfolds. Mr. Goodell has always shown an attitude toward being very stern with discipline. Let's take the Bounty Gate in New Orleans, where he had an independent group come in and evaluate all of the information that was on the table. As just before we came onto the show, I had an opportunity to talk to a very good friend of mine who's an NFL agent, and we spoke of this, the Bounty Gate, if you will. One of the things that Mr. Goodell went as far as to do is to retrieve 21,000 emails and texts, film footage even all the way back to practice with the New Orleans Saints as it pertained to this. As we see, he went out of his way to get the job done. Now as we fast forward with the situation with Mr. Rice. We know that an unfortunate thing took place in New Jersey. We have evidence of this. One of the things the NFL has always prided itself on is that the tape never lies. The question is, did Mr. Goodell see this tape? Now, you must understand, he is employed by a billionaire's boy club. Everyone there are billionaires. They have huge pockets. They have a lot of friends, and they have a very close-knit network. So if you would, for the lack of better terms, look at this as you do the movie The Godfather. And when The Godfathers call you in and have a sit-down, you hope that you can get up from the table still with your dignity intact. One of the things that has been asked of Mr. Goodell, as it pertains to the NFL and its counsel, is do you know first about the tape, and have you had an opportunity to see the tape? At this point, Mr. Goodell has stood behind his statement that he has not had an opportunity to see the tape. But let's look at this a little closer, if you will. One of the things that we must understand is that he just recently passed down a policy on domestic violence. The question is, how was he able to go ahead and give reprimand to Mr. Rice on this, and then 1 week later, we have McDonald come out with a situation, and Mr. Rice tapes all of a sudden shows up all over TV. So here's the deal with that. Now, as we move forward, what does the agent do? Here's where the agent plays Olivia Pope in the TV saga Scandal. He must now sit down with his client and find out ways in which he can damage control. Yes, we know the tape is out there. It was very difficult to watch. But what do we do now to protect his brand? What he must do now is look at a couple of things. First, the agent must go to Oprah Winfrey, do an exclusive with her. The reason? Because she's a part of that billionaire boy club status. She can now bring out things in him that will be able to be seen nationally and around the world that she'll be able to take back to her colleagues and say with confidence, I feel that his sincerity is there. Moving along, he must now move from Oprah and then go to Dr. Phil. Why? Because you have a certain group that will be interested to see how Dr. Phil puts him on a panel, puts him out on TV to see how it works. As he moves from that, he must now look at Ayanda. Go, can you fix my life? Last but not least, he needs to head to Ellen, who also has a general audience and has a lot of power herself in being able to put people on her TV show to bring them out. On top of that, he needs to do some self-imposing sanctions on himself. Go to the women's battered shelters. Be willing to not only give money, but give a tremendous amount of time. Most importantly, his wife also has to be a part of this process. It's not just about Ray Rice. It's about Ray Rice and the team. As we move forward and we look at the end part of this, when it comes down to the coaching and what happens in the locker room and what has happened with the Baltimore Ravens, they've already parted like the Red Sea. He's received all of the money that he's going to get. It could have been a distraction, but we will not know until it comes down just to the game tonight. This is the deal with Coach Hill.
Wow, and definitely we look forward to future what's the deal with Coach Hill as well. But, wow, great digging on that one. You found out a lot of stuff that I think will answer a lot of questions for everyone. And as Reggie was mentioning right before, or as he mentioned as we were doing the last segment, it's just came out that Ray Rice, in his sit-down with Roger Goodell, told Mr. Goodell that he hit his fiancée in the elevator. So that bit of information now brings me to the last, the last wrap-up part of End Zone, as well as the last wrap-up of this issue for today. Do you guys see Roger Goodell keeping his job in the foreseeable future as the commissioner of the National Football League?
Absolutely not. I think that with this information coupled with that video, absolutely not. There's no way. And there was an anonymous quote by from an owner. I was looking at another media outlet a little earlier where an owner spoke and said, hey, they believe Roger Goodell. They believe he's not a liar. He does what it takes to protect the shield, yada, yada, yada. However, comma, that owner stated, if indeed this is true, there's not one owner that will support Roger Goodell going forward. I think with this new information, if this is indeed true, absolutely not.
I agree with you, Reginald. One thing about this particular fraternity, whether it be the NBA, NFL, or the NHL, the Big Three, you must understand that their reputation is always at stake. It's not about the money. It's about loyalty. It's about their reputation. And when they ask these questions, trust me, 9 times out of 10, they already have the answer. They're waiting to see if you're going to maintain that loyalty. At this point, the fact that it has come out that Mr. Rice has come forth now and said that he spoke directly to Mr. DeBell, told him what had happened in the elevator, and that tape somehow surfaced, I think is going to be almost impossible now for him to stay. I don't think they can move him quickly because he does have a contract with them, but I think at this point they will be looking for a successor, unfortunately.
Yeah, I hate it because I've been defending the guy all week. He's done so many good things, but a lot of people keep bringing up that he has a replaceable job and that his job description, whether it's to make money for the owners, whether it's to protect the face of the league, which he I'm not sure that he's necessarily done with his recent actions. But regardless, I just don't see Roger Goodell being the commissioner going forward. I mean, I don't know how soon it'll be, probably once they do have the successor lined up. But he may see the end of the year, and I think that may be it for him. But as I teased early on, and I'll let everybody think about these over the break before we get in the Falcon Zone, the In the Zone trivia this week hinges around two sets of numbers, those numbers being 9,508, 10,070, and then the other set of numbers being 62 and 56. Now, I'll let you guys think about it over the break, and when we come back, I'll let you guys guess as to what you think those numbers might be, and then I'll give you a couple guesses. But for Mr. Reggie Walker and Coach Haywood Hill, this is Jeremy York, and this has been End Zone. We'll see you guys in a few short seconds. Make sure to stay on the line. We'll be here for Falcon Zone. Jeremy, the Impact York from End Zone here. Would you or your business like to advertise with End Zone? It's easier than you think. With many packages available, we've got the perfect deal to help you promote your business to a whole new audience. All you have to do is contact us at 3endzone@gmail.com for more info and to get started today. Let us help you grow your business. And that's right, we are here for Falcon Zone. Welcome back. I'm here with the coach, Haywood Hill, and Mr. Reggie Walker. How we doing, guys?
Outstanding.
Outstanding, Jeremy. Thanks for having me.
And in case you guys missed it in the first half of the show, we debuted the new segment, What's the Deal with Coach Hill? I highly recommend you go back and check it out. And we debuted Walk the Line with Reggie Walker last week. I highly recommend going to check that out as well, and I look forward to the upcoming episodes of those in the near future. I think you guys do an outstanding job with those.
Thanks, Jeremy. Thank you, I appreciate it.
But before we went to break, I threw out the numbers 9,508 and 10,070, along with 62 and 56. Now, I guess I'll give you guys a guess apiece as to what you think those numbers could be, and if need be, I'll give you the choices on what they actually are. So, Reggie, you want to go first?
I'd rather wait on my choices.
All right, well, Coach, I know you want to take a stab at this.
Yes, I am going to go out on a limb and say that the first number that you have given to me are the yards that Matt Ryan has had against the Saints, and the second number are the yards total that Mr. Brees had against Atlanta. So the New Orleans-Atlanta connection would be the yards over the rivalry along with the passes and or completions. How close am I? I can be.
And did you have a guess on the second set of numbers?
The second set of numbers, I want to say they are the – it would be too hard to say touchdowns because that would be outlandish, but I want to say passes completed.
Okay, those are good guesses. They are incorrect, but they are good guesses. I guess I'm like Dan Patrick on the new Sports Jeopardy. I want to watch it to see what happens when somebody gets something wrong, because if you're really far off, I could understand somebody going, really, that's what you thought of? But, I mean, to me, that was a better guess than what it actually is. I will give you guys two choices on players. I mean, it's pretty easy once I give you these, but I'm going to give you two choices on two Falcon players. And I'll say the number. So 9,508. Is that the career receiving yards for Roddy White, or is that the career rushing yards for Steven Jackson?
Career receiving yards for Roddy White.
Coach?
I'm going to have to go with that as well. The receiving yards from Roddy White.
You would be correct in 9,508, and that is including this week's 72 he had against the Saints. That's Roddy White's receiving total, because a lot of people don't realize that Steven Jackson pretty much became a Falcon as a 10,000-yard rusher.
Absolutely.
So... Right. Given those other two numbers, 62 and 56, those are either the receiving touchdowns by Roddy White or the rushing touchdowns by Steven Jackson. Any guesses as to which is which?
62 would be the receiving touchdowns by Roddy White and 56 the rushing touchdowns of Steven Jackson.
Coach?
Yeah, I would have to agree with that. I think you'll get the ball in the air faster with more touchdowns than on the ground. So I would have to go with that.
You guys would actually have that one a little backwards there. It's actually the opposite. Roddy has caught 56 touchdowns, and Steven Jackson has 62 rushing touchdowns career.
Wow.
Wow, okay. That's interesting.
But that leads us straight into Falcon Zone. I wanted to get more into those stats as far as some of the stuff we do on here, because a lot of people didn't realize how good Steven Jackson was coming in and why he got the contract he did from Atlanta when nobody else really wanted to give it to him. Atlanta saw that, you know, this guy's still got maybe 2,000-3,000 yards in the tank or more. He's worth, what, $3 million a year for 3 years?
Yeah, okay.
I'm not saying he's done it yet, and I don't know how long it would take him to get the 3,000 more yards. But at the same time, you know, he played quite well this week, actually. He had 12 attempts for 52 yards. He was averaging 4.3. Given what he's done in the past year, that's a pretty high number. I was actually impressed with Steven Jackson. I felt that the reason Roddy's numbers was only 5 catches for 72, which is a 14.5-yard average, by the way, with his longest being a 39. And he did get the touchdown. What made Matt Ryan effective this week is that he spread the ball around to practically anybody that would catch a pass, including Devin Hester, who kind of, to me, may have been the top receiver.
Yeah, Devin Hester had, I believe, actually Julio had more yards overall, but Devin Hester had 5 receptions for 99 yards. I agree with you, Jeremy. The fact that he distributed the ball in the fashion that he did, was impressive. What was most impressive for me, watching from the sidelines, was this was the very first game in quite a while that I never saw Matt Ryan look down at his feet when the pocket was collapsing. He absolutely was in the zone. He could care less what was going on around him. He kept his face, he kept his head up. He kept his eyes upfield. And I think that that was probably the most impressive part about his game this week.
One of the things I like to add, and I said this before the season even started, some of the key notes and key things that Matt Ryan would have to do. One of the things that he did, he finally took leadership of his football team. The locker room is no longer split. I think that he is now truly, you know, defined as the leader of the Atlanta Falcons. So that was the first thing. Second thing I mentioned was that he was going to have to run a little bit. He was going to have to sustain third down plays. If it was under five, he was going to have to, if the pocket began to collapse, he was going to have to go back and be the Matt Ryan of old, the first 3 years in the league where he made you account for him. The last couple of years he has not done that. If you're going looking at New Orleans games, he ran the football some. We're not asking him to run for 100 yards to be as athletic as Michael Vick, but in certain situations where the pocket breaks down, the coverage is good, you only need 3 or 4 yards. You can't hang receivers out to dry. You can't force it into tight space. Tuck, slide, get the yards, move the chains, and keep the play going. And they did. He did a great job with that. He also showed great poise with them going into overtime, still rallying the team around him and pushing them downfield to get exactly where they needed to win the game.
Yeah, and I'll get into this in a second. After you mentioned the rushing, there when he took off a few times, I had to look back. I was watching three different games at the same time, but I always tried to key in on the Atlanta game, and I saw him take off running. I almost thought maybe they had one of the other two quarterbacks in. I was confused that he had took off running, but he was effective. He slid when he needed to. He got out of bounds when he needed to. I mean, he looked good.
Yeah, and Jeremy, watching it from the sideline where I was, I have the fortunate opportunity to be able to be right up on the actual Falcons bench during the games. What was most appreciative, and I think what really came out of this is it speaks to what Coach Hill was just mentioning, is there was a play where I think it was third and 10. Matt Ryan came out of the pocket, couldn't find a receiver. He took off. I think he only got 9 out of 10 yards, and they ended up having to punt. But if you could have seen the reaction on the sidelines when he came back, A, he was upset that he didn't get the 10th yard, but more importantly, I think it changed the perception of a lot of those players on that sideline who may have thought that this guy wouldn't do whatever it takes to win a game. And I think that was probably the most advantageous play. That was the play that changed the culture of the game. You saw guys high-fiving. You saw the coaches high-fiving. You saw a lot of things and a lot of emotion and a lot of camaraderie that I have not seen out of this team, quite frankly, since the days of Mike Vick. I'll just be honest.
Well, and I would actually pinpoint to that moment as well. Just like last year when he took that late hit from the Saints in the first game and nobody come to his aid, and that was kind of the way the season progressed, I know the play you're talking about. And, yeah, as miffed as he was that he didn't get the first down, suddenly when he took off running like that, I believe he had 3 attempts for 15 yards, which it wasn't even – I think it was more than that. I think this is an incorrect stat. But when he suddenly started running to pick up the yards they needed and wasn't staying in the pocket the whole time, suddenly even Sean Payton almost looked like he wanted to just throw his playbook in the air. Like, well, if he's going to start being, you know, a mobile quarterback, then I got nothing for him. It just suddenly the Saints were tuning out, and the Falcons were all on top of winning that game.
Yeah, and that speaks volumes to a comment that Coach Hill actually said a little bit earlier in the conversation that we had a little earlier, in that whenever a guy changes the dynamics of the game plan, it kills a defensive coordinator, because Matt Ryan wasn't that guy that you had to account for. Oh, he's not going to run. He's just going to stay there. But now that he's shown teams, hey, I will get out and go get those yards if necessary, now that changes the assignment of some of those linebackers And those guys can't necessarily drop back in coverage as much because now they have to account for the fact that this guy's going to get out there and go get those yards if necessary.
Well, I must admit, guys, the biggest personnel change comes at the middle linebacker spot. Because the middle linebacker is the quarterback of the defense, he is responsible for keying in on the quarterback. He is respected by all offensive coordinators. If you notice, if you get an opportunity to listen to some of the sound bites in a football game, the first thing that the quarterback does, he walks up to the line, he calls the play according to what defensive front that he sees in secondary coverage, and the next thing he does, he will call out the number of the respected middle linebacker. 55 is the mic, 52 is the mic, 7 is the mic. Whatever that number is, he is always identifying where the middle linebacker is. So with that being said, now the middle linebacker has to go, and it's almost like it's playing chess, really, human chess. He must now, he can't leave to give that support underneath on the short routes. He can't close on tackles that are about to be made and rip balls out. He now has to make sure that he keeps Matt Ryan inside of those tackles. That's the biggest job that he has now.
Yeah, and it's funny that you mentioned the middle linebacker because they play a 3-4 set, so they really have two. But the leader of their defense is a guy by the name of Curtis Lofton. I believe Falcons fans will remember Mr. Lofton, and he looked frustrated all day long. I think he thought he had Atlanta's number, and every time he turned around, they were running circles around him.
Absolutely. It was a fun thing to watch. I got to tell you, it was really refreshing to see this guy really take over as the leader of this team.
Well, and I posed the question to Coach earlier, and I told him I was going to mention it on here. My answer to this question clearly right now is yes. And even though I'm the first one to tell you, hey, it's just the first week, hey, it's just one game, let's see what happens. Like I said, my answer to this is yes. We'll see you guys take. Did Matt Ryan answer all the critics that say that maybe he's not elite or that he shouldn't be considered in the top echelon of quarterbacks up there with Brady, Breeze, Peyton, all those kind of guys?
Well, I'll tell you, I heard an interesting statement that was made in regards to that same question. And the interesting comment that was made was their classification of elite is a quarterback that can make things happen regardless of whomever's around him, i.e. a Tom Brady who has a handful of rookie receivers thrown into the mix and he still moves the ball, versus someone like Matt Ryan who, with the right weapons, can appear to be elite. But as in last year, you have Roddy White go down, you have Julio go down, and he appears to be mediocre. So I think that that's kind of a toss-up to a lot of people. I think he obviously showed that when you give him what he needs, he can make it happen. But I will still say what drove me at least to an elite status mindset with him is if he plays with the mentality that he played with last week, that regardless of whatever happens, I'm going to make this happen, to me that makes him elite.
Coach?
My take is going to be quite intriguing, gentlemen. One of the things I must say about Matt Ryan is no question that he's up there with the elite quarterbacks for two reasons. One, his salary demands and commands. And two, he has the numbers that over the course of his body of work with Atlanta to prove it. But here's the thing from a coach's perspective that I'm looking for. What is going to make me really put a light and the crown on the head of Matt Ryan is what he does in these first 4 weeks. As you look at the schedule, he has Cincinnati. You know, naturally, the rivals game, it doesn't take much to get up for. But now, when he goes into this type of impact game, where the team can play down, not necessarily Matt Ryan, now what does he do to make them stay focused? Does he go into Cincinnati? Does he beat this team like he should beat this team? I am saying Atlanta should not come out of this nothing less than 10 points. In a victory over Cincinnati. So now that question has to be answered. And then the two games after. Reggie, you can line up for me. Who do you guys have in week 3 and week 4?
Week 3, we come home for Tampa Bay, and week 4,
okay,
we're Minnesota.
Okay, so there you have it. These next three games are going to determine how this team really defines his leadership, A, and B, does he stay in the mix? But as of right now, things that have been said underneath the radar is that when they were at the team facility for weightlifting, whatnot, if I'm not mistaken, Reginald, you can correct me. I think that happens on Tuesday at the facility. The coaches came in to go through their normal routine because players need routine. They need that type of structuring. When they came in, it was a ghost town from my understanding. In the process of looking for the players, cars are out here in the parking lot, but there are no players in sight. Word has it, Matt Ryan has corralled them all into the film room, and everybody was there. And then they had the coaches leave. He was conducting film. And that tells me right now where Atlanta stands, where they're going, and by far he's an elite quarterback.
Well, to me, I don't like the word elite. That's why I usually say just the top or the upper, you know, the top level of quarterbacks, and it doesn't have to be a third of them because I don't think it is. And the easiest way to define it, because I had a media friend of mine say, define top level or define elite in one sentence or in 10 words or less. And I said, for the most part, to me, it's, you know, ball on the 20 or no. Yeah, pretty much. I think I said ball on the 20, 1 minute to go. Do you trust the quarterback to win the game for you? And you know, I put Matt Ryan up in there. I think there's about six or seven quarterbacks that in that scenario can almost guarantee you a victory. And like I said, I put Matt Ryan right in there with that.
Well, absolutely. That's a great point, Jeremy, because a lot of people do not understand or realize that Matt Ryan actually has more comeback victories than any quarterback that's out there right now. I believe he's at 28 right now. And again, I remember watching and talking to a Saint fan who happened to be in my area, and at the point that Atlanta was down three, there was a minute and two left on the clock, and I remember this guy saying distinctly, we gave Matt Ryan way too much time. And that's a good thing to have in a quarterback, and knowing that, you know, you give him anything more than 30 seconds and you gave him an opportunity to win the game. So, yeah, I agree with that point, Jeremy.
Yeah, and they were able to – it was in overtime. Actually, on that drive with a little bit of time left, the people around me, I looked and I said, you know, this is going to overtime. And they said, no. And I said, if I were a betting man, I would say this is going to overtime. Matt Bryant's going to tie it up here. Matt Bryant's going to win it in overtime. I said, but both drives are going to be set up by Matt Ryan. And it played out like a storybook. I wish I would have convinced myself otherwise and wouldn't have blown a pick last week. But, you know, 37-34 over the Saints in week one, the Saints looked pretty good. For the most part, it was the offensive game that we thought it would be. Some defensive struggles on both sides. But, you know, given what we learned from that game, how does that set up the game with Cincinnati this weekend?
Well, I actually think just to the contrary in a sense, and I'll say this, Coach Hill and I talked about this a little bit earlier. The first two drives that New Orleans had, typically in any New Orleans game, that's 14-0. New Orleans walked away 6-0. You got to kind of tip your hat to the defense in that regard, because they held what I think is one of the most prolific offenses to 6 points. That being said, I do not believe that Cincinnati is half the offense that New Orleans is. So I think you see the defense pin their ears back just a taste. I know that they still have quite a bit of new guys on the team and a lot of new additions that they kind of have to gel before we're going to really see what they have to offer. However, I think that they have a much easier time in corralling the Red Rifle, and I think that Matt Ryan does more of the same. I think that Cincinnati won't have any answers for this monster that Atlanta has, not only at the receiving side, but with the running back by committee. Once again, Mr. Antone Smith has shown that you just get him the ball and he's going to the end zone. I like what I saw out of Devontae Freeman, especially on that 3rd and 10. He went and got 11 yards. I mean, and those types of intangibles, if they keep it up, I don't think there's a team out there, gentlemen, and I'll say this now, I don't think there is a defense out there that can stop this team when they're playing the way they played last week.
Yeah, I must admit, it's going to be very hard. Again, I think what you need to look for at Matt Ryan this week, and I'm going to predict it early, guys, he is going to be very animated on the sideline. Now, this is not going to be in a negative way, but what he's going to do, he's going to act out the level of focus that you must have. Guys are going to go into a little slump somewhere in this game, and you're going to watch Matt Ryan go over and voice his opinion and tell them, stay focused, guys, stay focused. This game is not over. So you're going to see him come out, and the mistakes that he had in the game, passes that were missed, he is going to be pinpoint accurate. I promise you, this week he has spoke a lot to this team about how focused they need to be and do not play down to the level. New Orleans has been, that game is over. We've celebrated our 15 minutes of fame. Move on. We got Cincinnati in front of us, and I think that is going to be the momentum. That is going to be the philosophy. I think that is going to be the leadership that you're going to see in Matt Ryan. Watch him on the sideline closely this weekend. Watch how he goes to guys. He's going to be hitting them on the shoulder, giving them high fives, but more importantly, he's going to say, stay focused. You cannot ever sleep on any opponent.
Yeah, and I think, you know, I'm gonna give a lot of credit to Matt Ryan as far as his development as a quarterback, but I feel like Hard Knocks really brought this side of him out into the open a lot more and has actually shown everybody that he can be that, you know, put the team on your back, rally around me style guy that I don't know that we've seen before, but it's not necessarily been publicized. So he could have been doing it all along, but this year he's made it a point to let everybody know where he's taking this team.
Yeah, I agree. Hard Knocks has a lot to do with it. But I will also venture to say, and I don't know Mr. Blank personally, but he appears to be a guy, and I think I've heard Coach Hill mention this statement before, that if I give you $5, you better bring me 10. And I think that upon signing that $100 million contract that he signed, I believe Arthur Blank looked him in his eye and said, hey, I'm going to give you this, but I need you to produce. I need you to be what I brought you here to be. So I definitely think Hard Knocks definitely woke him up, and it's going to be fun. I'm super excited. If we can stay healthy, and to that point, I want to also give kudos to that offensive line, specifically Mr. Holmes and Gabe Karimi, who had to come in for Jake Matthews, who got injured and was out in the second quarter and beyond for the rest of the game. I mean, they held up. They did what they needed to do against a front four that everybody thought was going to kind of decimate Matt Ryan, and those guys held up, man. They did their job.
That was actually the next point I was going to make, Reggie, is that so far Jake hasn't practiced this week with an ankle injury. We're not sure how quite severe it is. We just know it's an ankle injury, and they're not really being vague about it. They're just doing their own research. And as soon as they know something, I know they'll let us know about it. But I had a lot of Falcons fans, even at the time that he went down initially, because it was an odd play. The Falcons had called timeout to try to kick the field goal before halftime. Matt Bryant trots out, and then he starts, like, screaming, yelling, jumping around, waving his hands at the sideline because the camera happened to catch it, and he points back towards the line, and he keeps looking back and forth, sideline, offensive line. And finally, he calls another timeout, which back-to-back timeouts just is a pet peeve of mine, but he needed to here. And all of a sudden, they pan over the line. Jake's sitting on the ground. He hasn't gotten up, and he had his hand on his foot. All the Falcons fans, or a lot of them that I knew, started blowing up my phone at halftime saying, well, what are we going to do now? What are we, you know, he's out, and he's out. Who comes in? And I said, well, Gabe Karimi will probably take over. And as far as I know, it'll be business as usual. I have all the faith in the world, at least for right now, that, you know, Holmes was able to step in on the right side when Baker went down so that they could move Jake to the left side. The only thing I'd be worried about is it seems to be a cursed position right now to play left tackle for the Falcons.
Yeah, and again, this is a perfect segue into where the coaching, and we talked about this before the season started, and who I thought were going to be some of the big MVPs to a successful Falcon season, and Brian Cox and Mike Tice. And I'll give you an example just from the sidelines that I saw. In the lone sack that Matt Ryan took, it was because Gabe Karimi got beat, and he was the one that gave up the sack. Mike Tice very quietly walked over to Gabe Karimi and just looked him dead in his eye. He didn't say a word. He didn't move. he just looked him dead in his eye, and he walked away. And from that point on, Matt Ryan didn't take another sack. I don't even think the guy got close to Matt Ryan, at least not from the left side. So, again, this is where the coaches have coached up. This is where you are now starting to see where Mike Tice and Brian Cox, the addition of those two guys, is really going to help propel this team to the next level, I think.
Yeah, I like to add too, guys. Let me tell you what makes Atlanta a dangerous football team. They have went out and really did their homework over the offseason in their acquisition of free agents plus the draft. Let me tell you what I saw in Mr. Matthews. If I can get back on the field, I better hurry up and get back. Because what they're doing there is challenging everybody in every position, okay? Even though he's their number one draft pick, it has already been proven that they can play football games without him right now. And so what that does, that's a good problem to have as a coach, to know that every player in that locker room knows that unless it is season ending, I better hurry up and get back to my position because everything is by committee now. And that's what it takes to win. Atlanta now has this mentality. We don't care how we win as long as we win. And so now that you can do that, and once that team comes together like that and that chemistry is there, and right now they're proving that they are starting to show the ability to self-police and to do things on their own without being told by the coaches, without things being said, watching film together as a unit, that you cannot whoop a team. That has been the secret to the New England Patriots for so long. It wasn't just their talent. They were a team. As a coach, I can attest to this. I can beat you with 2, 3, 4, even 5 players, but it is very hard to beat a team. And I can tell you as a defensive coordinator, Coach Ryan was very frustrated. When he saw Matt Ryan leave that pocket, there was nothing on that game plan that prepared for that. So that's why he folded it up, put it in his hand, and didn't look at it again, because at this point, I don't have an answer for that. And that's why the Atlanta Falcons will be successful. That's why this team will finish 11-5. I'm still putting them there. And don't be too surprised that you see them in the Super Bowl. If they can stay healthy with this mentality, I don't think there's a team out there that can really beat them.
Well said, Coach Hill. Well said.
One come to mind, but I'm not going to burst the bubble right now because, no, Atlanta fans should be excited. For all the excitement you should have had last year, all the injuries took away from you. I mean, I know I'll be at the game next Thursday. Hopefully be able to get down early enough to hang out with all the people that have sent out invites to us. And that kind of segues into the last thing I was going to mention. Reggie, for what you can actually tell us, because I do know what happens at tailgating stays at tailgating. You know, what can you tell us about your experience this weekend tailgating with Mark Cooper, who has already given us a shout-out on Twitter. Appreciate that, Mark, of the ATL Falcoholics. You know, tell us a little bit about your tailgating experience.
Well, in the efforts to not incriminate myself, I will give you the G-rated version.
Okay.
Obviously, the tailgate went off at 9 o'clock in the morning, and it was probably well over 300 people there at 9 o'clock in the morning, both Atlanta fans as well as Saints fans. So there was a lot of friendly banter going on back and forth, a lot of good music, a lot of good food, and we stayed out till, you know, roughly about 45 minutes before game time. They actually had television set up for those people that did not have tickets to the game, and they had a few people that kind of stayed back to kind of monitor that situation. But all in all, it was a great experience. You know, what's crazy is that for as venomous as the fan bases are towards one another, there's never any real altercation other than verbal between the two. And it always ends up being a good time. Those guys are obviously, we're away this week, so they won't have any event. They're just going to be kind of meeting up in one of the local spots. But on Thursday, I got a text message from Big Sweet over at ATL Falcoholic. They will be having a happy hour / tailgate come this Thursday for the Bucks game. So Jeremy, maybe we can get down there and meet up together, and you can get a firsthand experience of how they do business.
I definitely look forward to it, and you can follow Mark Cooper in the ATL Falcoholics. Correct me if I'm wrong. I believe it's at ATL underscore Falcoholics on Twitter. That's correct, right?
Yeah, that's correct, Jeremy. That's correct.
Good. I didn't have it in front of me. I was trying to find it, but as the sun's going down, my light's leaving me here. Yeah, overall, you know, Falcons fans should be excited, and we look forward to taking in some games, hopefully a lot more of them than I normally get to go to. But, yeah, next Thursday seems like a blast, but it's one game at a time. They will be taking on the Red Rifle, and in case nobody's figured it out, that's one of the fun nicknames I like to say because it just kind of rolls off the tongue. I'm actually not even a fan of Andy Dalton's. I just like saying Red Rifle, I think.
Yeah, he's definitely a guy that I think he's an up-and-comer. I'm not completely convinced about him yet, but he is definitely one of those guys that if you sleep on him, he can definitely carve defenses up. I mean, he's not called a Red Rifleman for kicks and for grins. I mean, other than his red hair, but the guy has a rifle for an arm, and he has a receiver named Mr. AJ Green that will give you fits if you do not cover him. So it should be a fun game. Like I said, I will be on site reporting from there, or taking in the sites, I should say, taking some pictures or whatnot. So you guys take a look at the national broadcast and just look for the guy with the ATL Atlanta Falcons red jersey, number 73.
I have a question for you, Reggie. Do you have the helmet to accommodate you as well?
I will absolutely be donning the helmet as well. Have the helmet on the entire game.
You know, for all of our listening audience, especially since they can't see us on a normal basis, if you get a chance to find us out somewhere, as always, take pictures, tweet them back to us. We'll put them up on the website and everything. But as some of the listeners have said about some of the fun things we talk about, picks or it didn't happen, Reggie. So we look forward to some pictures that you've decked out and everything so everybody can see exactly how passionate you are into this.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I will make sure that we put some out on the Twitter. Absolutely. Stat.
But
to add, Jeremy, if you don't mind. I'm sorry to interrupt. All I would like to say to the Cincinnati Bengals fans, Icky Woods is a very good friend of mine. I'm going to call him, Reginald, and most definitely make sure that you guys get a chance to connect. But I want to say this to the Cincinnati Bengals fans, beware. Reggie Walker will be in your town.
Absolutely.
and actually, wasn't Icky the one that did the Icky Shuffle? He does the Cold Cuts commercial now for Geico?
Absolutely. As a matter of fact, I spoke with him yesterday congratulating him on his commercial, and I'll be speaking to him again tomorrow. Letting them know, Reggie, that you will be there and so that you guys get an opportunity to meet.
And absolutely, Coach. And real quick, I know we talked about that. If you could give it, give a shout-out for his effort for any of the Falcon fans who might be in the Cincinnati area, I definitely plan to donate to his cause. So if you wouldn't mind speaking on that real quick so some of the other fans can definitely take advantage of that.
Sure, I would like to. I don't remember, guys, and please forgive me for not knowing the actual charity that he has, but his son suffers from some disabilities, and he does a lot of charitable work within the Cincinnati community. A lot of those proceeds go toward his son's illness. So, again, I want to commend him on that. I want people to come out and support Mr. Woods on any of the efforts that he has, and please take some time out if you're in the Cincinnati area, more especially at the game, to go out and shake his hand and tell him I said hello, tell him that you heard about it here on the show, and please donate to his call.
Let's see. I was trying to find some information on it real quick. Do you happen to know the name of it?
Well, Jeremy, what I would do, this is what I would do, is when I'm sure Coach Hill will connect me with Mr. Woods. Once I get a definitive, I will actually put it out on Twitter and actually tweet you and text you guys as well so that we can get that out. Also, any fans that are in the area, tweet me to find out exactly where the tailgate may be, or will be, and I will also give you the information on where we can actually go make donations on behalf of the Impact Zone and the Atlanta Falcon community.
Yeah, definitely, and, you know, we'll reach out to him as well if he wanted to come on the show and talk about his career and ultimately about his charity and how we can reach out like that. But, that's going to do it for us this week. Anything I left off, anything you guys can think of?
No, Jeremy, I think we're pretty thorough tonight, guys. You, at least you picked right this time. You picked Atlanta, guys. So y'all don't be too hard on Jeremy when you see him out of town. He actually did pick Atlanta to win this week.
To be fair, I picked him a lot of times last year when I shouldn't have, but I bit the bullet to try to help people out. But for the coach, Mr. Haywood Hill, and also the Falcon fanatic, I guess is a good term, Mr. Reggie Walker, I am Jeremy York. This has been the End Zone Falcon Zone Super Pro Football Show. Appreciate you listening. We'll see you guys next week.
Yep.